In this session, we're following in the path of Shen Nong and seeing what we can discover about the properties of herbs by tasting them. Boris Bernansky, one of the founders of Dragon Blood Balm, guides us through this process of tasting the herbs and observing their effects. If you want to follow along, we'll be tasting some Huang Qi, astragalus root, and some Du Zhong, Eucomia cortex, to see how they differ. But this is a fun one, so let's get right into it with Boris. I think this is a really interesting concept, this idea of learning herbs by tasting them, because I've taught herbs classes in school, and we did it the boring way, where you just go through Bensky and memorize the functions. How do we go about learning herbs by tasting them?
So it's pretty straightforward. Essentially, you taste them. There are a couple of guidelines that are going to help us to understand how we're interacting with the herbs. And I'll just tell you a little bit about how I kind of discovered this method. I don't want to say discovered it. It's just that I found a teacher, which I'll mention in a few minutes, who taught it to me. But I was always interested in tasting the herbs. I remember, like in school, when the teacher would pass around samples, I would always kind of nibble on it. And one time they were passing around Bado, and the teacher was like, "Boris, don't taste that."
Yeah.
Before it got to me, I was like, "Okay, thanks, thanks for the warning." I didn't.
Yeah, because I was gonna say I had a friend in school who was all about, "I'm gonna taste the herbs," or he's like, "I don't feel comfortable giving herbs to a patient unless I've tasted them myself first." Mm-hmm. And then he like took a large dose of Bado. I'm like, "I'm surprised you didn't kill yourself."
Did he have any reaction?
I think he felt either really cold or really hot, something mm-hmm. like that. I don't.
So I mean that. Like, I can respect your friend's, work ethic, so to speak. But, you know, obviously, it's worth looking at the warnings of the other teachers, right? You know, see what experience they've had. It's like, oh, if this is going to give you the runs really bad, maybe it's not something to try unless you really need that.
Yeah, and that's maybe something we should mention. Are there safety concerns with this? Where, like, I think we say that Shen Nong lived tasting the 100 herbs. He also died tasting the 100 herbs.
Yeah. Well, he poisoned himself. I forget the exact story, but Shen Nong was like a spirit immortal type dude. He had a clear body, so he was able to see what the herbs did. So he was able to see where the poisons went. So he was able to cure himself each time.
Okay, kind of like we talk about the window. I usually heard the window in his stomach, but he could actually see where it's going through the channels and which Zongfu or.
I wasn't there, but the way I heard the story, it made it sound like you could see where it goes and what it does. You know, Shen Nong's a great transition because if we look at the Huangdi Neijing, it tells us specifically what the different flavors of herbs are supposed to do. And we learned this in school, but I feel like it's either glossed over or only mentioned like in herbs one and then never really mentioned again. Or, you know, we memorize the flavors of herbs just as a property, but never as a guide to how to use them. So this is an article that's written by my teacher, Julianne Nugent-Head, and it's available for free online. You can see the URL there, and if there are show notes, we can put them there. But she has a quote here from the Huangdi Neijing, and it is essentially the guide for herbalism, so to speak. So we can see here, acrid can disperse, can make things move. We have the Chinese here, if anybody can read it. Sweet can build, can slow, can harmonize. Bitter can drain, can dry, can make firm. And notice that they're using the word can here. It's not guaranteeing any of these things. It's just it can do those things. Sour can gather and can astringe. Salty can descend, can soften. And bland can leach and can benefit. And here the translation is create flow. So that's like, you know, gently move. So using that as a guideline, when we taste the herbs, we can sort of think about what to look for. So like what flavors do we taste? And based on that, we can create a theory as to what they might do. And the flavor is only one aspect of it. So we taste the herb and first you experience it in your mouth. You experience it in your nose to see what the smell is like, to see if it's very fragrant, if it hangs out for a long time. And then we pay attention. Do we start to feel things in our body? Like a certain herb like huangbai, if we drink it, take my word for it since I've experienced it, is it kind of goes down real quick, kind of percolates down. Kind of if you take a shot of whiskey,
yeah,
you feel the heat travel down and it hits the stomach, or if you take some bitters or something, you know, it you can tell where it goes. And likewise, huangbai in particular, you can feel it really hitting that stomach and even going lower. Oftentimes you'll start feeling gurgling in the intestines or something like this. And the same is for other herbs.
like when we say that Huang Bai is bitter, the bitter has a downward direction, and we say that Huang Bai goes to the lower Zhao, that's not just a theoretical concept. That's something when we taste the herb, we can feel that bitterness going down and we can feel it being directed to the lower Zhao and
precisely
clearing out our vaginal discharge or whatever.
Exactly. No more vaginal discharge. However, Huang Lian, like really similar flavor in the mouth, in my opinion, but it doesn't do that whole thing. It kind of hangs out here, and the bitter lasts a lot longer. And it's interesting. So like, and then Huang Dian is used for clearing heart heat and heat in the upper jaw and like agitation and all these things. And so, you know, we look at what our experience is, and then we also look at, no reason not to look at Bensky. You know, they have great information here, and they have the experience of all these teachers throughout time and what they've found that the herbs do. So I'm not saying we should ignore that by any means, but we taste it, experience it ourselves, and then we can also understand the functions much better. Because it doesn't, like Huang Bai doesn't clear damp heat. Huang Bai is bitter and cold and goes to the lower area, and therefore it clears damp heat. It's not like it magically does it somehow. It's because of these kind of properties. And you know, Huang Bai is every one I've tasted is pretty bitter, so it's like that doesn't vary plant to plant. But I'm not sure. Let's talk about like a food we eat. So if we, Julianne, actually the teacher that I mentioned, she often mentions the metaphor of apples. It's not a metaphor. It's like example of apples. If we have a green apple, like a Granny Smith, and compare it to like a Fuji or a Gala. It's quite a different taste, but they're both apples. So like depending where the apple grows, the season, the type of apple, even though they're both the same fruit, they're going to be wildly different flavor and therefore probably are going to do different things in the body.
Yeah, like a tart versus a sweet sort of thing.
And
yeah.
So like if you have a recipe and it calls for green apples, but you only have red apples, do you not make your apple pie or do you just adjust the sugar? So, you know, this is what we have to think about, in my opinion, when we're using herbs and tasting herbs. So if you're trying to build up someone's qi and we're trying to use a sweet herb, but we're tasting it and it doesn't have a lot of sweetness, either we can't expect it to be a great qi tonic per se, or maybe this specific one needs a higher dose or something like that. I mean, what do you think? Have you tasted different herbs at all? I mean, you have that huang qi sitting there. Like, I'm sure you've drank in herbs as medicine.
Yes. I'm not sure. Sometimes I would do it like in class. I would always, when we would go through that first week where we'd look at all the different flavors, actually the first thing I would do is I would make muffins. I found a really good muffin recipe that has all five flavors. It's like a ginger, green tea, orange peel.
That
muffin.
Sounds fantastic.
And so I'd be like, oh yeah, can you taste, it has some cranberries in it for the sour. It's like, can you taste the bitterness of the tea and the acridness of the ginger? Sometimes like that. Sometimes we do specific examples where it's like, if I want you to taste bitter, I'll make some Huang Lian Jie Du Tang, and people be like, oh, this is the most bitter thing. They run and spit it out because it's so bitter. I'm not sure I've ever actually like my friend who took the Ba Do. I think he was very Buddhist. He would actually sit down and meditate with the herbs. I've never gone that far as to be like, can I see where this is traveling in my body? But I have tasted things, and some of them, and to me, it's almost like some of them have like, I'm not sure I can identify the flavor, but like Huang Qi, I think, has a very distinct smell and a very distinct taste that if somebody is cooking Buzhong Yichi Tong in the other room, I can tell what it is versus like if you taste Dong Gui, it almost to me, it has like a soapy flavor. Oh, like some of these are very distinct. Some of them just taste generally like herbs. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I definitely noticed that, and then I was thinking about it, and I realized it's probably that so many formulas, let's say, have Dong Gui, that we have this experience of, oh, this is what herbs taste like. Oh, that's actually Dong Gui.
Yeah, or sometimes in class, like when we were in school, we would get the herb samples, but they pack them all together in one box. So sometimes people would try to smell the herbs, but it's like they've been packed together for so long, it just smells vaguely Chinese. It doesn't actually, you don't always get the distinct smell of it.
I had that experience actually today when I was cooking my doujiang. I'd ordered it. It was packed with rogue, and I was like smelling it. I'm like, damn, this smells like cinnamon. Hopefully that kind of those essential oils boiled off a little bit. But actually, you'd mentioned the cautions. So I think it's a fair point to make that we do need to be cautious, especially if we don't have guidance. But I mean, a lot of the herbs that are prescribed are safer than we think. especially if you're not taking it long periods of time. And a really great actually way to reference that is if we look at the original categorization of herbs in the Shennong Bansao. I don't know if you know your listeners are too familiar with it, but they, rather than organizing it on function, they organized it on like upper, lower, and middle herbs, upper, middle, and lower herbs. And essentially that's an organization based on strength of action, of strength of function, where the lower herbs you can take for only a short time and are necessary for severe diseases, whereas the upper herbs you can take for a long time, and often they have like this added function of lengthens the life and makes you light. That being said, there are some herbs that are in the upper category that people might feel very uncomfortable about and might throw out the whole baby with the bathwater. But for example, Jusha is in an upper category. So that's kind of potentially problematic, especially if people don't know how it can be used safely. But for the most part, most of the herbs in the upper category are going to be things that are safe to use for long periods of time. And, you know, we don't necessarily, we lose that a little bit in the current Materia Medicas. They don't have that categorization. And I think that's a bit of a loss because it kind of hides from us the potential versatility of the herb. They do give you that range of dosages, though, which is kind of useful. Another thing to consider is that if we look at the Shanghanlin, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, I feel like I didn't learn it in school, I learned it outside of school, that the dosages of things in the Shanghanlin are significantly higher than what we use based on Bensky, for example.
Yeah, I was going to say certain things always surprise me. Like you wouldn't think like Shergao is sometimes a very large yep. dosage or...
yeah, there's like over 100 grams.
Shuhuang especially. Yeah, even like Chai Hu. Like I just saw a note today where it's like, here's Chai Hu in the Shanghanlin is this. Modern practitioners reduce it by a half or a third mm-hmm. or something like that.
So yeah, I think full dose Shao Chai Hu Tang, I can't remember the exact dosage, but it's like... well over 70 grams of Chai Hu, maybe over 100 grams, whereas modern practitioners will seldom go over 18. And for example, there's 45 grams of Guizhi in Guizhi Tang, as per the Shanghanlin. In Bensky, it's like, you know, recommended dosage is 9 to 12 grams or something like this. So if we're expecting big, strong effects, those are the dosages we should be considering. And I think by tasting herbs and experiencing them, we kind of can see like, oh, okay, let's say if you drink Huanglian at 20 grams, like we're doing 20 grams of herbs today, you're going to notice a big effect. And you're like, okay, that was really strong. But if you drink, let's see, what wouldn't do much? If you drank, I don't know, Longgu at 20 grams, you're not going to feel much. Like that's like that much of that stuff. And it's a pretty, you know, I mean, if you have a tendency to have issues, like maybe it'll give you some constipation or something, but you know, you're not going to feel too much. So like there is places to use a 3-gram herb, like Wu Weizi or Huanglian or Ganjiang. You can easily do something real with like 3 to 6 grams, but some herbs you kind of need a bigger dose, in my opinion and in my experience anyway. So the main thing is pay attention to those like harsh expellents or herbs that are in the forbidden category. Or if you have the Shennong Bansao as a reference, just if it's in a lower category, maybe don't start tasting a big dose of it, or maybe consider not tasting it unless you have some presentation where you potentially could benefit from it.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, on the one hand, there's like obviously there's some obvious toxic mm-hmm. herbs that we should be careful with. But I guess I was also thinking in terms of like, again, sometimes for class, I would make Huanglian Jiedutong just so we can taste the bitter flavor. And I feel like even if you've been diagnosed with spleen qi deficiency, or even if you've been diagnosed with weakness deficiency cold in the middle, you can probably still taste a little bit of Huanglian Jiedutong just yeah. to taste it, and it probably won't kill you. Like as long as you're not taking a huge formula over a long period of time, just tasting the herb probably won't kill you, even if it would be contraindicated.
For sure.
In your normal treatment.
For sure. I think that's a really good point because, you know, we don't have to, it's like a sommelier, they don't drink a bottle of wine each time they taste the wine. Yeah. They taste it. So you taste it, you get a feeling for it in the body. It doesn't, like, it goes there, but, if there's very little of it, it's not going to do anything. Or it won't do much. So unless you're very fragile, some folks are very sensitive. Like, you know, the people who typically do really well with Japanese acupuncture, a small dose of herbs is going to make their qi move. Because this, you know, essentially it's making your cheat do something.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you about. As we were talking about these large dosages, on the opposite of end of the spectrum, we have compo medicine where they use very small, not only like very light needling technique, they use very small dosages of herbs. Do you have an opinion on that?
I don't have a strong opinion. I definitely know some compo practitioners that I think are like very legitimate and are doing good work, like Nigel Dawes and some of his students out in New York that I've met and worked with. I personally don't resonate with that per se, and I haven't been able to get it to work the same way that I can get using a stronger dose to work. And I feel that when I write a big dose or a moderate dose or a dose I consider appropriate for the patient, I will see a change. And so there's not going to be like guessing. It's like, oh, is this maybe helping? It's like, no, this is either helping. If it's not doing anything at all, then we need to probably increase the dose, or it's hurting. And, you know, I hope that more often than not, I'm helping than I'm hurting or not doing anything. Kind of, but it kind of helps you to clarify your direction too, because if someone is taking like T pills, I don't know, 8 grams a day, I mean, 8 pills a day for 6 months and nothing happened, did the Chinese medicine not work, or was it the doses like so small that it wasn't going to do anything? And it also depends on the disease. Like I have pregnant patients, I'll write them, all right, take Zisu, 3 grams, just brew it as a tea and sip it throughout the day. That was their formula or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, how quickly should we notice results? Because I feel like I remember being in school and I had one fellow student and she was like, oh yeah, I've been taking Xiaoyaosan, but you know, sometimes herbs just take a while to work. I had to take Xiaoyaosan for 2 or 3 months before I noticed the difference. And I was kind of like, is that a real thing? Or does that just mean you weren't taking the right formula or you weren't taking the right dosage? Should we notice something the next day, the next week?
So in my experience, and I don't want to speak on behalf of my teachers, but a lot of practitioners I respect, for example, Andrew Nugent-Head and Julianne, Michael Peluso, he's kind of a big name in the Facebook teaching world. Like he does really great work with herbs. I would err on the side of within 2 weeks, you should definitely be noticing a change, probably sooner, because you should be prescribing something that's going to be effective for your patient and not wasting their time. So, you know, obviously there are conditions that take a long time to make a big difference, but like you should be clear on your direction. So especially if you're writing a formula that is either hot or cold, not super balanced, sometimes we'll have to write a formula that does like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of that. And so the changes are going to be small because you're not using like I guess it's not hitting with a lot of momentum. It's kind of going in there and gently reorganizing things. But are you familiar with MicroGuard?
No.
All right. So there's this guy, Andrew Miles. He runs Botanical Biohacking. They have a podcast and a product line.
Yeah.
So they have this herbal pill MicroGuard, and they're these teeny tiny pills, and they work. You know, it's one of the only patents I keep in my pharmacy at my office, because you know when it's appropriate and I prescribe it, within 2 doses people are noticing a difference. You know, when I prescribe herbs, I mostly write raw herbs these days. I use Camo Pharmacy. They just do drop shipping for me. I'll write patients maybe a 6-day supply because I need them to report back whether or not there's a change. If like I never give them like a month of herbs and say, okay, come back to me in a month. Hopefully something has changed a little bit. And sometimes I'm on the phone with patients or like checking in with them and they're like, okay, I'm feeling this and this. I'm like, okay, take that herb out. Like, and I'll modify the formula like on the fly. They'll take a picture of their formula and I'll be like, okay, it sounds like this formula was too sweet for you and too cloying. So let's take out one of those dates and cut that black disc dihuang in half. And, you know, tell me how you're feeling the next day. And then they'll be like, okay, that's much better. So I expect a change within a week, especially if I'm treating a problem that's loud enough that we would notice a change. If I'm treating amenorrhea, maybe it's different.
Yeah, so not necessarily 100% improvement.
No, not at all.
In a week, but we should notice some sort of change. And I don't know, for me, I almost feel like some sort of change, even if it's not entirely positive, is better than no change at all. Because at least then you get some feedback and you know that something is happening. So if they said, oh, I got really nauseous and I had diarrhea, that's better than nothing happened at all.
Exactly, exactly. And that's actually, I'm just going to keep coming back to my tasting thing. because I'm going to use every opportunity to make points. but that's a really good point. So if you know what you're prescribing, you know what the directionality of the herbs are, and which you can tell by tasting, you can almost tell right away, you'll know like, oh, they're feeling nauseous. That means for some reason the formula is going back up. Either it moves up too much on its own, and we need to see if there's too many light herbs in there or something like this, or there's some dampness stuck in the middle, and so they're just bouncing off of it, coming up. You know what I mean? So if you know what your herbs are doing, like you know the directionality that they're supposed to move, like how they act in the body, then it's much easier to deal with like, oh, I felt this from taking that formula. You can be like, okay, that's that herb. That's too much of that. Let's cut it down. Versus if you just know it harmonizes liver and spleen, what do you do with that? It made me nauseous. Like, okay, so what does that mean? I mean, there's probably a good answer of what you can do with it. I don't know. I'm just saying, from my experience, for me, it's much easier to think, okay, even shayasan, if it's making someone nauseous, I would consider first like looking at the sweet herbs, or maybe, you know, because that could, maybe that's affecting that middle jiao, or increasing some of that baijiu and decreasing a little bit of that dangwei.
Should we go ahead and taste something?
That sounds great. All right.
I got my huangqi. I recently switched over to granules just because I'm lazy and I don't have an herbal pharmacy in my living room anymore. So,
hey, granules work. Granules work well if they're used well.
Yeah, and this is something I'm kind of excited because it's like huangqi. I've tasted just straight huangqi before, so I feel like I have some idea how what it's supposed to taste like. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see if this tastes the same. I got my little latte frother that I use because I'm too lazy to stir.
That's reasonable. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to get those sweet herbs to dissolve. So I'm brewing up this huangqi. I got it. This is the huangqi I use in Dragon Blood Balm. So I haven't actually tasted it, so I'm curious.
And this one, at least when I looked in the granules, I noticed it looked a lot more yellow than what I'm used to. I was always confused about huangqi. Never looked very huang to me, but...
So I guess mine looks kind of yellow. Looks like something yellow. Sorry, slurping loudly.
Yeah, this tastes a little bit different than what I'm used to. Mm-hmm. I feel like I might be tasting some of the fillers in it.
Yeah, I think with granules, sometimes that's the case. And for example, when I was, I've kind of participated in Michael Peluso's teaching platforms, and one of the things they recommend is you starting off on, and I don't want to put words in their mouth, so, but still, that group, they oftentimes recommend doses starting at like 8 grams as a single dose, so like 8 grams twice a day to start. So, you know, we're expecting that's 16 grams a day times 5. So that is the equivalent of about 80 grams of herbs a day, which is a fairly big dose compared to what a lot of people will write. You know, most people will write maybe 5 herbs at 9 grams each, or maybe 10 herbs at 9 grams each, and then split that over 2 or 3 days versus that much in one day. So I think the dose is really important. So especially with granules, with the filler as a consideration, we got to dose up.
Yeah, and when I was at symposium, I talked to one of the guys at the Meiwei booth, and he was saying that, like, yeah, if for certain long-term things, I might follow the instructions on the bottle that says, like, 3 scoops 3 times a day. But when it comes to, like, if you really want to knock out phlegm with Ching Chi Hua Tan Tong, he will often go much higher than mm-hmm. that. So I think that's another thing where sometimes people just go with the bottle, but we can still go higher. Yeah.
I mean, when I had COVID, I think I took about 50 grams of granules a day. For 3 days and I was done, but
yeah,
but I was taking like 10 grams every 2 hours.
So we're doing huangqi, astragalus root. This is in the category herbs that tonify qi. It's also called bei qi, northern qi. What do we know about huangqi? It's sweet in flavor. Mm-hmm. It tonifies qi. It's good for securing the exterior and stopping sweating. It's good for tonifying the lung qi, tonifying the spleen qi. It has a very strong upward direction mm-hmm. to lift things upwards. Also, I think can promote urination.
Interesting.
Should we be able to taste all of these things in the herbs?
Well, we can probably taste some of it. I definitely taste the sweetness. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if you taste the sweetness.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Does it have an acrid flavor at all too? Here, let me pull it up here. Because I'm feeling a little bit of dryness in my mouth. So I'm wondering if it has any drying. But as far as like the lightness goes, I definitely feel like it's kind of, the flavor is lingering in my nose. Like it's like mm-hmm. it's traveling up through my nose. Whereas some herbs, you know, you kind of feel it going down. Here, I definitely feel like the smell and the flavor hang out in the nose. So I have a friend who he can take a sip of something and he's like, oh, it goes to my left pinky finger. I can't do that. But typically, the more balanced you are, the less it's going to disbalance you. So like the more illness you might have, the more easily you get swayed one way or another with herbs or with anything. That's why, you know, if your Zhang Qi is strong, wind is not going to invade you like that. And you're going to be able to walk around people who are coughing without necessarily getting sick. Likewise, you can eat something weird and it not do too much. So I think with herbs, it's similar. So if we're tasting it and we're in a relatively healthy state, but not practicing and, you know, becoming very aware of our bodies, it can be a little bit hard to perceive some of the more subtle things. But at least, like, if we focus on the flavor and the smell, we can definitely see it's light. I mean, the texture of the fluid is also, it doesn't feel heavy, it's not sticky. So even though it is tonifying, it's not like a sticky tonifying, like if you were to eat some honey or have something like that.
Yeah.
So we can consider that it will benefit the spleen and, like, it's not going to encumber it with dampness.
Yeah, it's not going to clog it down like a shudi could or something like that.
So like when we're thinking about something like shudi, for example, it's a great example. It's thick and it has like a weight to it. And even the color of it, the liquid comes out black. Yeah. I mean, this is hushu, right? That has shudi and hushu. So those are heavy substances. So we can probably consider that even though they're sweet, they're not going to tonify the qi. They're probably going to tonify the blood, the more kind of yin aspect of things. Where, like, if we look at this, it's super light in color. It's not super spicy. So, like, okay, probably not going to tonify the yang. And it's not, like, heavy and light simultaneously. So it's probably going to more affect the qi, so to speak. But, you know, it can be used to raise yang, like, you know, in rectal prolapse. In, like, Bujong Yichitang, it's considered something as lifting up the yang.
I was going to say, I feel like when I've had this raw, it's a little bit sharper. I feel like my granules is maybe a little bit more muted or maybe a little bit more muddy. So again, that might just be the filler, the other stuff in it.
It could be the filler, for sure. I mean, I've had a much stronger taste in Huang Qi. So the source I use for Dragon Blood Balm, they try to wildcraft their herbs and get the highest quality possible, so long and make sure it's clean. So I've had more concentrated tasting Huang Qi in the past, and I'm looking at the cut I have here. It's relatively small if you compare it to those tongue depressors.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, normally, yeah, they look like popsicle sticks or really long strips.
So those tongue depressors are typically about that wide compared to this. And so I think with that age, they can build a lot more flavor. So the one I'm tasting is quite light and really quite yummy. I don't taste anything bad in it. I would definitely, like, if I wasn't concerned about it making me too jittery, and I haven't experienced that necessarily, but, you know, just because of what the books say, this is delicious. I would love to drink this on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I was going to say this, like, I think of it as a little lightness, like it's kind of like that light and refreshing, like you would drink like a flowery tea during summer, that kind of light refreshing versus like a, I don't know, something heavy. I'm trying to think of something like...
I mean, I think even dates, like if you chop them up and boil them, it comes out like it's like a syrupy, heavy, it's a heavy drink.
Yeah, because I'm almost thinking like in the summer when you eat like an angel food cake with strawberries, that's much lighter, more appropriate with the summer, or like a nice, like a light soup versus like a heavy, a hearty stew that you eat during the winter, or a heavy chocolate cake, which would kind of
exactly.
weigh you more down. This is more on that like light, refreshing side that it's... It's not going to bog me down.
But as we're drinking it, I mean, I've had, this is about an ounce. I definitely feel like a little bit lighter in the head and a little bit excited. And I don't know, maybe you're just a very exciting person to talk to.
I don't know about that.
Or maybe I'm convincing myself. But I definitely feel like a...
Yeah, but as you said that, I was thinking, like, I definitely feel it more up in my head. I don't feel it down in my stomach, whereas, like, when I started drinking the wine, like, I felt that going down in my stomach. This, I definitely feel it more, like, up into my head, maybe in the upper body, but definitely not, like, something sinking into my stomach like I just ate a sweet brownie or something. I guess I'm really into chocolate tonight. Like, ate something heavy or drank a stout beer or something like that where you feel it go down into your stomach.
Exactly. That's pretty much my experience, and that's pretty good. So, like, if we have the similar experience, even the tastes are a little bit different, more or less they're doing similar things as far as the qi goes. Like, the taste It's similar. It's sweet, but yours is a little muddy. But the action of the herb, it's still relatively a young herb. It goes up, and we can taste that from just like a little few sips. How many spoons did you put in, by the way?
I think I put in 3 spoons. So I think that's usually what they say here.
So that's like 15 grams.
Which I feel is like Huang Qi is one of those ones that goes up to like 150 grams.
It does, But also sometimes like it'll be like 12 grams or like 9 grams. Sometimes I get really surprised because I'll see formulas. Like right now I'm reading this book. I don't know if you've heard of this doctor, Dr. Tan Xunyan. She's, hold on, fact check myself. I need to make sure I'm pronouncing her name right. Tan Yunchen. Sorry.
Tan Yunchen, okay.
So she's the first female physician to have written a book that we have access of. So she was a Ming Dynasty doctor. And she mostly, you know, she took care of a lot of women because she was a female. And in the Confucian times, they weren't like really allowed to interact with men for the most part.
Was this trans? Who trans? Was this Sabine Welms?
Lorraine Wilcox translated her book. And it's really great. It has like really great case studies and discussions. And then recently, I think her name is Lisa C. She wrote a fictionalized history of her life. So it's like a novel.
Okay, yeah.
It's like a Chinese medicine novel. It's really great.
Yeah, no, because I remember that book coming up and it looked like it was really insightful because they kind of said that a lot of male practitioners at the time didn't necessarily have the same kind of access to female patients. It's like they had to take their pulse through the window and stuff like that. So this actually gave us a lot of insight on women's health conditions. So anyway, that just popped into my head. Go on with what you were originally saying.
So like, yes, that's one of the reasons the book is so fun and like fascinating. And the novel is actually really good. My wife and I listened to the audiobook together and we loved it. We couldn't turn it off. Where was I going? Right. So she writes really small doses. She'll write like, you know, 6 to 10 herbs at 3 grams each. And the person takes it for like a week and they're better. So I think the better you are as a doctor, the less often maybe you need to use like a big heavy punch. But I'm not there where I can like just use like a tiny toothpick and poke someone once and then with herbs anyway, and have a big effect. With acupuncture, somehow I find it easier, and I'm oftentimes able to be very minimal. But with herbs, I find that, at least for now, I'm hoping maybe one day I can be like, okay, you need 0.5 gram of Baijiu, and that's going to fix all your problems. That's the herb you need. But for now, I'm like, all right.
Yeah, I guess what I've come to prefer is a smaller number of herbs, but still using the large dosages. Like I don't like to over modify a formula. I feel like that just muddies the waters too much. But personally, I've never had success with that compo style formula. Whereas when I switched to like full Chinese doses, that's when I've seen the magical results.
I think the other thing with compo style herbal medicine is it's really important to get the diagnosis right. And that's why they spend a lot of time. They feel the pulse, they feel the abdomen, they look at the symptoms, they look at the tongue. I mean, we should all be doing this theoretically, but it's not just on interview. There's a lot of palpation. And when I followed, his name is Boris Shapiro. He was one of Nigel Dawes's like close students. When I followed him, he would oftentimes give like, here's a 2-day supply, and then he would have the person come back and then he would recheck the abdomen and look for confirmations that there has been a change. So the patient might not feel it at that point, but they're looking for a change right away in the qi of the person. And so then it's like this kind of slight, not modifying, because typically in compo you use pre-made granules, but you're just like switching the herbs. Maybe, you know, you want to liver qi stagnation formula, but no longer is it Jiawei Shaiyosan. Now you switch to Shaiyosan. Now maybe it's Chaihu Shugantang. So it's this constant like tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I know a lot of people who do their acupuncture like that, where it's like, oh, I'll stick in a needle and then check the pulse to see if it changed. Now what point do I need next? And they'll stick a needle in and they get that instant feedback through the pulse. And I feel like normally we can't do that with herbs. We can't just like drink some herbs and immediately my tongue changes color or something like that. We usually don't have that kind of feedback. So that's really interesting.
That's what I try to imitate sometimes with my patients that are sensitive to things. I'll give them a formula and they'll brew it up. And then based on their reaction, I'll modify that like the next dose and the next dose until we can find something that they can take for a long enough time before they come to me the next time and I can just write a whole new formula if needed. But yeah, it's much easier, I think, to go with fewer herbs, because at least if you get it wrong, you know what you were doing, because you were like, okay, we are supporting the blood. All right, that wasn't the right choice. Well, let's clear dampness.
Yeah, and sometimes I felt like, again, when that diagnosis was good and I was using those herbs, then some of those extraneous modifications weren't necessary. Like sometimes I feel people start, they want to chase after every little symptom. Like, oh, I should put in some Xin Yi Hua to help with their
nose.
Yeah, to help with their allergies, and put in some Chuan Chong to help with their headache, and put in this. And sometimes, like, if I just take that out and focus on treating the root with those herbs, then those branch symptoms just automatically resolve. So
I typically agree with you. Like I aim for that, to be smart enough to know what the root is and to be brave enough to ignore the branches. Sometimes, you know, you got to treat the branches, but oftentimes they're just distracting.
Is this how you studied herbs in school?
No, I studied at PCOM. So, my teachers in PCOM were actually really good. I like them. And we did mostly Lebensky method because that's what we needed to learn. We needed for the tests. I tasted the herbs. I would just chew on them. And for some reason, I couldn't figure out that, oh, if we're drinking them, we should boil them and taste them if we're going to bother tasting them. But I was already interested in trying to learn the herbs that way. So for me, tasting them and chewing on the herbs was almost a mnemonic versus a... it was a learning tool versus the way I learned the herbs. Does that make sense?
Okay, I see. Yeah. No, because I was just thinking that sometimes we say that herbal medicine is much more difficult to learn than acupuncture. And I mean, I think one reason is just you when you're in school, you experience a lot more acupuncture and you see it in the clinic a lot more, where you might not see herbal therapy used as much. But sometimes we say that acupuncture is a little bit easier to study because, like, you can touch the point, you can press it, you can practice locating on your friends, and so it's a little bit more real. Whereas a lot of times when you learn herbs, it's all in pinyin, it's all in Chinese, and you're just memorizing functions, and there's nothing really real about it. So I wonder how effective of a technique would this be? Would this make it real, or would it just be like, I'm spending all my free time cooking herbs, and I should really just hit the books?
Yeah, I mean, ideally you could do it concurrently. Like, I mean, we have how long are we in school? It's about 3 years, right? 3 to 5 years, depending on how you do it. But if there's 365 days in a year, so you can theoretically learn pretty much the whole materia medica, at least what we need to know for school, if you taste one herb a day for a year. Maybe you taste two herbs a day. But you don't have to taste all of them. But, like, I think it definitely makes it a much more experiential and easier to understand. So in school, I definitely had, you know, in school, I definitely kind of thought of herbs as really theoretical and tried to make them real for myself. But I was kind of frustrated because most of my supervisors in clinic weren't really clear on herbs or weren't clear on how to teach them to me. I mean, and just memorizing patterns and formulas didn't seem to work because typically most patients have, like, mixed patterns. If we want to stick to, like, the TCM model, like, most of the patterns are mixed. Most people don't have just blood deficiency. They'll have blood deficiency and liver qi stagnation and dampness. And, you know, maybe they have some sort of blood stasis because of injuries or a C-section or something like this. So
I think especially in a modern Western clinic, it's very...
For sure. And so because of the complex patterns I was seeing myself, and I couldn't really match them well to the patterns I was learning, and there were no teachers showing me how to do it. As I mentioned, again, the TCM Hub guys, they do a really great job of making TCM-style Chinese medicine work. I don't consider myself to be, like, a student of that method, though I have sort of dabbled, and I think it's really great. I mostly study with the Nugent heads, and they have a different approach. I can talk about it in a little bit. But... once I started tasting herbs and really experiencing it in myself, it was really eye-opening. And then once I saw, like, I followed them in clinic and saw them writing formulas and saw patients getting better, I was like, oh, okay, it does work. You just need to see it work to be able to use it. Acupuncture is much easier. You can stick a needle in yourself and you're like, okay, look, my finger's twitching. Or, you know, you overdo it and you're like, oh, okay, I've drained my qi.
Yeah, I was going to say that, and that might be a thing that in school, not everybody always sees herbal medicine work while they're in school. So I could see that as well.
And I think it's a great detriment because it's so powerful and so useful. I'm very happy that I do herbs now. And I'm very sad when I see people say that herbs don't work or they don't, you know, things like that. Because they do, and I think they're far more powerful than acupuncture, potentially, if used right. The other reason I got really excited about this method was, I mean, this is, at this point, just a thought experiment, because I haven't yet to really apply it. But during COVID, ooh, nice pot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I got my heavy-duty traditional pot. I usually can't do this up without spilling. We'll see what happens. Should we try the Dujong, but say what you're going to say first.
Oh, you got a nice brew. Did you do 20 grams?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine came out pretty light.
Maybe a little bit more. I think it might have been a little bit more, but not.
Maybe it's because you have a black t-shirt behind.
Tastes like bark.
Tastes like bark. I taste, maybe it's still a little bit of the huangqi in my mouth, but I taste a little sweetness. Let's see if that's going to get away.
Yeah, so we're doing a Dujong, a Eucomia cortex. This is the bark of a Chinese rubber tree.
Mm-hmm.
So it has some naturally occurring latex. So this is the one I'd always tell people, like, if you look at your sample, this isn't very high quality Dujong, but it's like, it's got that stuff in it. It's like, you can stretch it apart. It looks like tendons, and maybe there's some doctrine of signatures that were strengthening the tendons, but, Dujong, we're in the tonify yang category. So we see this a lot in our yang tonics, like Yogwewan. It's also like by going to the tendons, it strengthens tendons and bones. It's really good for strengthening the low back. We see it in things like Duhuo Jisheng Tong to strengthen tendon and bone. And I guess the other thing I think about with Dujong is by modern research, it has some effect of lowering high blood pressure. So we see it in modern high blood pressure formulas like Tian Ma Go Tong Yin. So that's what I know off the top of my head about Dujong. Can I taste my blood pressure lowering? Blood pressure. I was going to say, it's kind of weird to me that a yang tonic would be used to lower high blood pressure.
So. Yeah. Well, I'll let you see what you feel. I'm going to drink a little bit more. I'll comment on that specific thing if you don't make a comment on it yourself after drinking it.
Yeah, because I do taste a little bit of sweetness, but I taste like a little bit of earthiness, mm-hmm. like almost like that we get with like a puar, and so it does feel like it's going downward. It's not that up in the head like the huang qi might give me a headache after a while. This is going a little bit more downward.
For some reason, mine's a little bit almost like sour, like there was a drop of lemon. I wonder if there was something at the bottom of my pot when I cooked it. Do you get a little sour?
Not super. I wouldn't say sour like vinegar, but I'm thinking about the difference between light roast coffee and dark roast coffee. They say light roast is a little bit more acidic and it has a little bit more of that sour flavor. It's kind of more like that. I wouldn't say it's like apple cider vinegar sour.
No, not apple cider vinegar sour, no.
But that kind of like light roast coffee.
That's definitely sour. What I'm getting. Like, I don't know if you ever have like a bottled tea. They often put citric acid in there as a preservative, but just like a tiny amount.
Oh, okay.
So it's just like that hint of sour in the back. So I guess that is that gathering, and it's heavy.
Do you feel it going to your liver or anything?
I don't feel anything in my liver, but I definitely feel a downward sensation. Like, compared to the other one, I suddenly don't want to talk at all. I don't know if you feel that at all, but you're already talking way quieter. Like, with Huangqi, yeah. You were sitting upright.
Yeah.
Your hands are in the air.
I was getting shouty.
Excited, at least. When we drank this with the herb tasting course that I took with Andrew and Julianne, like the whole class was just like, And it was just like, oh, it's not just me. It's not just the guy next to me.
Yeah.
So it's pretty profoundly does that. And I'm actually, since tasting that and experiencing it, I've thought about it for my patients with like Shen disturbance, so to speak.
Mm.
Like it kind of anchors that yang.
Yeah, and I guess I wouldn't have thought about that in terms of like a longgu muli or something like the traditional anchoring things we think of. I wouldn't have thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like even in terms of like a bark, you wouldn't think that for a bark even.
But rogue, for example, is used to kind of guide the fire back to the mingmen, and it is a bark, and it is kind of heavy.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I'm sorry. I got this one makes me a little bit sleepy, and for some reason right away, and I don't know how much of it is Pavlovian at this point.
Yeah, but I was going to say, historically, I feel like I haven't really, like, I've been jealous of people who are really sensitive to these things. Like, sometimes when I would give samples in class, I'd be like, okay, let's cook some Xiaoyao-san. And I'd get, like, one student who just took a sip and she's like, I feel high right now. What's in this stuff? I feel high. It's like, I've never felt that way with herbs. And I'm kind of jealous that you feel immediate reactions. But
I think it's actually a great learning tool probably for first-year students who haven't opened the books yet. I think it's really fantastic for trying to figure out what an herb you don't know yet does. And that actually, that's one of the things I started talking about before I got distracted, was that during COVID, I was working out of a clinic that had a bunch of Western herbs in stock there. And I didn't really have access to Chinese herbs, and I would often have patients come in, and I could use these herbs if I wanted to. So I'd already known about this tasting method, and I knew that herbs are categorized, at least in Chinese medicine originally, by flavor and nature. So I started sort of playing around with these Western herbs, tasting them, and being like, this has this flavor, what are the traditional indications and functions? And so I started kind of just a little bit for a couple of weeks or a few months before I ended up leaving New York, playing around with this idea of using Western herbs, tasting them, and trying to understand them from a Chinese medicine perspective. Now I kind of jokingly say that I think I'm going to work on developing the skill more, but like in an apocalyptic world, or if you know a certain country attacks another country and we don't have access to all of our Chinese herbs anymore, how am I going to be able to use the Western herbs? Like, do I have to learn a whole new theory? I think no, so long as I taste them, then look at how not the ancients, but how people have traditionally used them, and try to understand like, oh, okay, this herb is great for muscle cramps because XYZ flavor. So in muscle cramps that I think are due to XYZ condition, I'm going to prescribe this versus, you know, another herb that might have a similar function theoretically. So I think that's going to, if we can learn to understand herbs by tasting them, we can be much more flexible, and we can just like, you know, so long as we know it's not poisonous, we can just chew on something kind of intuitively then, or not intuitively, but based on this knowledge, use it medicinally. It's exciting to me. I don't know. Maybe it sounds silly to you.
I guess with that, I was thinking of other things like, well, like one, if we don't have access to herbs in China, or some people talk about to what extent have the herbs changed, have the environment changed? Can we rely on these books from 2000 years ago when the soil and the environment is different? And do we just have to rely on Shendong's stomach from window in a stomach from all those years ago? Or do we have a way to update this? And then I think it gets into even things like if we want to talk about the properties of coffee, like can we empirically deduce what effect that is having on the body, sort of thing?
I think that's actually a really great point. And I think that's one of the big reasons that my teachers put such an emphasis on this, Andrew and Julianne, because when they lived in China for, I can't remember how long they lived there together. Andrew lived there from like 88 to 2014 or something like this. So they had access to like really high grade herbs and or all sorts of herbs for that matter that were relatively fresh. And so they were used to a certain thing. And then when they moved to Asheville, you know, the things that they were getting were not consistently great. I mean, and they only order organic herbs. So they make sure that whatever they get is clean as clean can be. And they would prescribe it. But still, they were seeing some things aren't as great as they can be. And they started growing their own herbs. So they actually have their own herbal farm. They have like a terraced farm of different herbs that they've been growing. And, you know, there's only so many things you can grow for yourself, but it's very interesting because it's not that same, it's not growing in that traditional growing environment. So how do we figure out what to do with this chrysanthemum that grows in Asheville in North Carolina? You taste it, you see what it does. And, you know, I remember one year I was visiting them and shadowing them in clinic, and like we would taste some chrysanthemum that they just grew, and it was so bitter. It was really cold. And I was very surprised because chrysanthemum is like this, you don't think of it as a heavy hitter. But this specific chrysanthemum, oh, you can use this to treat some real nasty shit. But maybe not the chrysanthemum you buy at the Chinese pharmacy, because if you taste that, that's nice and pleasant and a little bit sweet and a little bit cold. But you can, like, this wasn't just cold and bitter, like not just bitter flavor, but like it made you cold. So it's, I think you're absolutely right. If we don't taste what we have, we don't know what it does. Another great example is dangui. Like dangui varies so much in flavor, and it can be anywhere from bitter to acrid to sweet. And if you don't know what you're drinking or you don't know what you're prescribing, you don't know what the patient's going to get as far as function goes. And if we look at the books, like sometimes there'll be so many different flavors listed. And so if we look at the Materia Medica, like the Bensky, they just list pretty much all of the flavors that have been recorded. But if we look at specific doctors or like other materia medica throughout time, one materia medica might list Renchen, for example, famously is currently is listed as a hot herb or a warm herb. But in the Shang Hanlun, it was used as a cold herb. But I think that's one of the benefits of tasting it, so you can understand what you are using. So maybe this is not the thing that Zhang Zhongjing was prescribing. This is a different thing, or it's a similar thing. And we need to modify it accordingly, or maybe it's now safer to use for a longer period of time or something like that. So I did want to just mention these teachers again. As I mentioned, I primarily study herbs with Andrew and Julianne Nugent-Head, and I think they're really great resources for people. I mean, they're fantastic herbalists, and they treat like the most difficult types of cases. People come to them after having been failed by herbalists all around the world or the country. Like, people will sometimes move to Asheville to live there and get treated by them for a prolonged period of time. But luckily, they also teach. And they have an online teaching platform and an in-person teaching, in-person teaching, as well as an ability to shadow them in their clinic. So the things I wanted to really share that are related to the herb tasting, there's four things. First, it's this free course that Julianne offers. Here are four articles that she has written that really go into whatever we've been talking about in way more detail and way more eloquently with better quotes. And she has her videos uploaded here of her tasting the single herbs, discussing what they've been said to do traditionally in various materia medica and what how she uses them in the clinic, etc. So I think there's a good 30, 40 herbs here. And it's a really great way to get introduced to this as a way of interacting with herbal medicine. And then Andrew is doing an in-person course this coming year called The Practical Herbalist. And there are no prerequisites, but it's recommended that you have some familiarity with this material already, because in that course, we're going to be experiencing herbs. We're going to, like, for example, compare what is 5 grams of Huangdian versus 15 versus 60 versus 150. How much you use the herb in a formula, how much you modify a classic formula, when do you need to substitute Baishao for Dangui in Guizhetang? And things like this, kind of really going deep into understanding the nuances between small and medium and large doses, tasting them and experiencing them and modifying herbs. I think it's going to be really cool. We just finished a year-long course with Julianne where she did that as an introductory course where we tasted, 100 different herbs over the course of the year in class together, discussing case studies and stuff like this. It was fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to Andrew's, follow up on that. So if your listeners are all interested, there'll be a link apparently.
And for those other ones, is this for students, practitioners? Should people know something about herbs, or can they just,
so
should they be practicing?
I would recommend, so Julianne's free content is you should be doing something with medicine. It's not a great place for someone who knows zero, like a first day, first year student. But once you've already like gotten a little bit of basics, you can be a first year student. I think it's a really great place to start learning herbs, because it starts based on the source material, like the way it was, created, versus TCM, which where we're starting all the way at the front and working our way back. This starts at the back and works your way front. So you can understand all of the different layers of opinions and knowledge and commentary as you come across them. Plus, it'll be like what we talked about, where you can experience it without knowing what it's supposed to do, and then you can feel genuinely what it does. I think that's a really cool approach, and I wish I had access to that, but better now than never. Then her long-form class online is a great continuation from her free stuff, and I don't think you need any background herbal knowledge, because she kind of takes you by the hand.
So that's the end of part one of our conversation, talking about tasting herbs. We continue in part two, where we switch over to talking about the topical application of herbs and how it can determine the effects of those herbs. But if you're interested in learning more about tasting herbs and trying it out yourself, I'll put some links to those courses we talked about in the description or show notes below. The first is a free course with Julianne Nugent-Head, where she guides you through the tasting of about 30 Chinese herbs from Aye to Uweizi. The second is an online course with Julianne talking about how we can understand herbs by their flavor and nature, and how that flavor in nature can influence the qi and rebalance yin and yang. So instead of matching herbs and formulas to symptoms and patterns, we can understand how the herbs do what they do.
this course is approved for 21 continuing education units. And finally, there's a follow-up course that's being run in person by Andrew Nugent Head. This course deconstructs classical formulas according to the nature and flavor of the herbs, letting us know why those formulas worked. Then, with that knowledge, we can construct new formulas based on our patient needs. This class is taking place in person in Asheville, North Carolina, first on May 4th and 5th, and then again on September 14th and 15th, 2024. But that's it for today. Like I said, we continue the discussion with Boris in part 2, where we talk about topical application of herbs. So, I'll see you in the next one.